Hi, I'm Denny Somach, and this is The Rock Podcast. I'm a rock historian, producer, and best-selling author, and this is the number one podcast for classic rock. We're in our fourth season. On this episode, it's a conversation with Joel Selvin, author of Drums and Demons, The Jim Gordon Story. Selvin was the San Francisco Chronicle pop music critic for 36 years and is the author of more than 20 books about pop music. So who is Jim Gordon? And why is there a new biography on him? Gordon is one of the most prolific drummers of all time. He's heard on over 1,000 recordings. He's the man who wrote Layla with Eric Clapton and was a founding member of Derek and the Dominoes. But the story also includes his mental illness and the murder of his mother. It's a conversation I know you will find fascinating.
What made you decide to do a book on Jim Gordon?
Well, the story had been rattling around in my head since all that stuff happened. But to tell you the truth, it was an editor at a New York publishing house that I'd done a number of books with who suggested that my next book should mix rock and roll and crime. And as soon as he said that, Jim Gordon came up. And I was able to obtain a pile of research from some couple of gals that had worked with Jim on an authorized biography, like in 1988.
Right.
And I was able to get a stack of transcripts of interviews they'd done with Jim in prison. And when I looked at that, I knew that I had the nut of a book and that I could move forward with it.
Right. It doesn't seem to me like he was an obvious choice. He was much better known to the industry than to the public. I mean, people think, yeah, he was in Derek and the Dominoes, he wrote Layla, and he killed his mother.
Yeah, that's the story. It's obviously there's more to it than that. The book's not about the crime. The book is about Jim and his life and mental illness. And that is the potent intersection of his life and my narrative. It is how mental illness can destroy your life.
Right.
In detail, in vivid, granular detail. I mean, that book is wrenching in ways that I would have to get up from the typewriter, get up from the keyboard and leave my office. I just couldn't, you know, would be overwhelmed by the emotion of the stuff I was writing. He was a session musician. He was a great drummer. He was part of important rock groups, but who notices the drummer? But I wanted to illuminate his life story. I wanted to detail his artistic life so that you could understand from what heights he fell. And that was a challenge in and of itself. The artistic life of a professional sideman is that you join in other people's music, many other people's music. And in Jim's case, it's everything from Merle Haggard to Gary Puckett to Glenn Campbell to Traffic, Delaney and Bonnie and Joe Cocker and all that. So in a sense, the biography of the sideman was a whole challenge in and of itself. And then the biography of the person who succumbs to mental illness is yet another challenge. And then to braid those together was the enterprise here.
I mean, I know he's been on tons of records. I find it fascinating that there was enough of a story, but you indicated that was partially about mental illness. So I get it. Do you think you got to all the right people that you needed? Did anybody not want to contribute?
Many people not wanted to contribute. I've never had so much pushback on a subject. On the other hand, many people were anxious to contribute. Van Dyke Parks said, "Oh, Jim, he was the esprit de corps. Jim Keltner, who drummed alongside Jim in Mad Dogs and Englishmen, and in many ways idolized Jim, broke down and wept during our interview. Lenny Warnker, the president of Warner Brothers Records, spent an entire afternoon at his home talking about Jim and recalling him and fondly, just, you know, to Jim, it was a just inexplicable, to Lenny, it was just inexplicable what had happened to Jim, because he knew him as like somebody who was so all-American. He said he and his wife, they were like cheerleader.
Okay. Did you try and get Clapton?
Yeah, we made a run at Clapton. It wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
There are, like I said, there are plenty of people that didn't want to talk, including the people closest to Jim, his ex-wife, his daughter, and the best friend he started in the music business with, his daughter's godfather, Mike Post, who wrote all those TV themes. And I approached them at the very beginning, and they wished me well, and they were very respectful, but the answer was no. They had no interest in revisiting that trauma. When Jim died, I had finished the manuscript and sent it in to the publisher and took a vacation. And the first morning I was in Hawaii, the phone rang, and it's Mike Post saying that Jim had died and the family wanted to send out a release, get ahead of the story, but they didn't know how. And he had suggested that I might know how. Well, of course I do. And so we sent out a press release announcing Jim's death. And at that point, then everything changed with the family. And they were very forthcoming with interviews and family photos and really encouraging me suddenly. And in fact, all three of them have read the book now. And it was revelatory to all of them. Really important. Mike Post told me that he could stop beating himself up now because he came to understand that he couldn't have helped Jim any more than he did. So and also, you know, schizophrenics don't have the same emotional bonding setup. They don't make friends easy. They don't make relationships well. And so Jim didn't have close friends that I could go to, and they go, oh, let me tell you, every interview was like a shred, maybe two shreds, and then another interview and a shred. I did more than 100 interviews. All the existing research that was out there, plus the research that I'd acquired from the 1988 book, about 1,000 union contracts, which I don't think represents much more than maybe a third of his union career in the studio. But it at least it's some kind of an outline to what he did. And I mean, there's no interviews with Jim out there. There's one interview that he did for Modern Drummer in the 80s. There's no films of Jim. There's no films of Derek and the Dominoes. There's a TV appearance on the Johnny Cash Show, and that's it. There's no film of Derek and the Dominoes. So you're right. He kind of sort of flitted through rock music like a ghost, but he left his imprint on big hit records with George Harrison, Steely Dan, Johnny Rivers, Harry Nilsson, Carly Simon, Maria Muldaur, B.W. Stevenson, on and on and on and on and on. And his mark is there to be heard.
Okay. All right, let's talk about Layla for a minute here. Do you know the story that Rita Coolidge claims she wrote part of Layla and got ripped off?
Don't doubt her. That piano piece was something that Jim and Rita composed together in their home in the Hollywood Hills. Bobby Whitlock lived in the next door, and he remembered hearing it coming out of their home in Hollywood Hills. Bonnie Bramlett recalled to me Jim and Rita at back-to-back grand pianos in Olympic Studios in London playing that piece during a Delaney and Bonnie session where Clapton was in attendance. Rita tells me that she left a tape of this of the piece with Clapton. So they did the album in Miami. They came back sometime later to do post-production, and Clapton was not happy with the Layla. It was just the 3 minutes of the guitars. And he suggested that Jim add this piano piece to the end. So he'd had it in his mind. Jim took a shot at it, and then Whitlock begrudgingly took another shot at it, and the producer, Tom Dowd, made a composite of the two versions, and that became what he called the piano exit. Now, when the song was first released on single, it didn't have the piano part on it, and it didn't. It stalled like halfway up the charts. A year and a half later, they put it out again, this time with the piano exit on the end. And now it's a smash hit, top 10 record. And that's where Rita Coolidge hears it for the first time. I don't think there was any chance that she was going to be able to succeed in efforts to get her authorship added. She was up against Robert Stigwood, Clapton's manager, and one of the sort of more notorious business managers in the English record business.
Yep.
And that had already happened to her. She and Bonnie Bramlett had written Groupie Superstar, which she sang every night on stage in the Mad Dogs Englishman tour. But that was credited to Delaney Bramlett and Leon Russell. So there was something about in the music business at that point. What I said in the book was that the music business was just a pirate ship, and Rita was nothing more than a wench to them.
What caused the falling out between him and Clapton?
I don't know that there was a falling out. Derek and the Dominoes broke up in an acrimonious rehearsal where Jim had taken an hour or more to tune a massive set of drums and then started riding Clapton when he was having trouble tuning his guitar. And that was the end of Derek and the Dominoes, and Clapton went into kind of hibernation, living in the country and, you know, in a haze of heroin. But the next year, Jim is back in London and visiting Clapton at Hurtwood Lodge, and there's a piece of music that they made together that's out there on the internet called Devil Road or something like that. Fantastic Clapton guitar playing. So I don't know that there was ever a falling out beyond the breakup of Derek and the Dominoes. I think Clapton just went into a sort of personal crisis that took him years to recover from.
You wrote in the book that Gordon had sued Clapton.
Yeah, over Layla royalties, yeah.
Right. I assume they had a falling out.
Oh, you know, lawsuits are a fact of life in the music business.
Right.
It doesn't really interfere in personal relations. They talk about Jim was on that plane that was chartered to go to Mick Jagger's wedding in the south of France. Mm-hmm. And that Ringo was on the plane and McCartney was on the plane. And they had to sit apart because they were suing each other at the time.
Okay. Of all the records he played on, you know what his favorite was?
So I don't know that he would have picked a favorite, but in that interview with Modern Drummer, he talks extensively about the Judy Collins record. And that's fascinating to me because it's not a show-off drum record at all. It's a really sort of carefully crafted ensemble piece that lives outside sort of the boundaries of genres. You know, you could call it folk rock, but that doesn't really get it. I call it chamber pop. But it was Van Dyke Parks on piano and Buddy Emmons on steel guitar out of the Roger Miller Band and Chris Etheridge from the Flying Burrito Brothers on bass and Stephen Stills on guitar and James Burton on guitar. And Judy Collins, who had never played with that caliber of musicians before. And the record has a big hit on it, Someday Soon, where Jim does his Merle Haggard thing, you know, the cross stick, clop, clop. And but the drumming is embedded in this ensemble sound, and he's part of the whole thing. And that was his goal in life. He was a accompanist. He was a studio musician. He was there to finish the record, to give it its percussive bottom end. But he wasn't a backbeat guy or a timekeeper. He was somebody who saw the drums as a musical instrument and could drive them into the fabric of the musical composition.
Okay. What's your favorite of his?
I really like B.W. Stevenson's My Maria. I really like Friends of Distinction, Grazing in the Grass. I think that what he does on Layla is just amazing, but it's so obscured by the dynamic guitar parts on top, it's kind of hard to notice. I could recommend you go out on the internet and check out the isolated drum track to Layla. It's a work of genius.
Did any groups other than Eric Clapton's Derek and the Dominoes ever ask him to be part of their band?
Oh yeah, there was, you know, he was toured with Souther Hillman and Foray, Burton Cummings. He did European tours with David Gates and Johnny Rivers. And, you know, there was a lot of people that wanted him to go out on the road. Dylan asked him to go out on the road. Right. And, you know, it was expensive to hire Jim Gordon. He could make a couple thousand dollars a week in studios. Why should he go out for $500 a week? You know, because he wasn't really a road dog. He didn't travel well, and it strained his disease a lot to be away from home.
Well, was he ever a true member of Traffic for Low Spark, or he just hired to play on it?
No, he belonged to the band for about a year, well, about 9 months. He was doing sessions with Traffic while he was still in Derek and the Dominoes, the sort of early Low Spark sessions. And then within a week after Derek and the Dominoes was over, he was doing gigs with Traffic in England. And they finished that album. They did a UK tour, and then they did a US tour. And that's sort of like December. Jim decided to stay home for Christmas, and they fired him. It wasn't a good mix. The Traffic guys were pretty mellow, easygoing guys, and Jim was just on full rampage, shooting every kind of drug imaginable, and just, you know, misbehaving as much as he could. So, yeah, he was there for, you know, most of 1971.
Did he ever do a solo album?
Yes, he did. He did Jimmy Gordon's Jazz and Pops Band in 1969. It's him and a bunch of the guys from the sessions, Tom Scott and Gary Coleman and that, doing a Bob Thiel jazz record, a lot of covers, some show-off drumming on it. But if you ask me, the real Jim Gordon solo album is The Incredible Bongo Band. There's two albums by The Incredible Bongo Band that first one has Apache on it, which ended up being one of the most sampled tracks in hip-hop. Jim's drum break is just massive to the hip-hop world. But the second Incredible Bongo Band album strikes me as like a Jim Gordon solo record. His playing is just fantastic, and it's just all over both sides of the album.
I'm not familiar with that group.
Incredible Bongo Band was a little hustle by some record business character. He needed a single for a movie and did this sort of bongo record. And because he was a hustler, he put the insignia on the label that said it was made in Canada. And, you know, the Canadian radio has this homegrown content law. And so suddenly the record was all over the radio in Canada. So he went up to Toronto to record the album and brought all these Hollywood guys, Jim Gordon and Mike DC and King Harrison on congas, and they did this kind of instrumental album of old standards, and it went nowhere. But about 10 years later, BJ Cool Herc found it, and the drum break in Apache, which is just riveting. He got two of those, and he could bang back and forth between those two, and he could keep dancers going all night. So that entered the Apache drum break into the vocabulary of hip hop, and I think it's been sampled like 1,000 times.
What label was it on?
Atlantic.
Oh, okay. Interesting. And he did two albums?
Yeah, two albums. And the first single is not Jim, and it's other Hollywood fans, but the albums themselves are Jim and King Erickson, who is also the conga player on Grazing the Grass with the Friends of Distinction.
Okay. Seems like you did a tremendous amount of research, which you do on all your books, but do you think he was a difficult guy to work with?
So no, just the opposite. He was a collaborator. He was genial. He was easygoing. If he was annoyed in the studio at doing extra takes beyond what he thought was necessary, he never said anything. As the disease progressed, there were episodes that were kind of unexplained at the time, little incidents in the recording studio, you know, shouting at Dean Park, "Stop that. I know what you're doing. You're making me miss the one, the whole note on the one, and you're moving my hands." You know, nobody understood what the hell he was talking about. It's funny, you know, there's all these little sort of psychotic moments with Jim, and they just, like, everybody just sort of like looked the other way. You know, the rock scene in the 70s was incredibly hospitable and accommodating to drug addicts, to alcoholics, to sexual deviants, to wife beaters. But man, you know, they did not know what to do with somebody who was actually mentally ill.
So what's your next book going to be?
I hope to do a book with Barry Mann, the songwriter, about his career with his wife, Cynthia Weil. We're talking
it?
About that. We're working on that now, yeah.
Have you already started it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We're working up a proposal and getting to know each other and beginning to talk. Those guys wrote so many great songs, and they lasted so long. And the marriage intersected with the songs in such a way that they really were writing their own autobiography while they were doing this stuff.
Right.
It should be a wonderful story.
Okay. So the book is Drums and Demons, The Tragic Journey of Jim Gordon. And I read it. It's great. So I look forward to talking to you again when your next book comes out.
Thanks so much, Denny. I really appreciate the interest. This Jim Gordon book, I mean, like I like all my books, and some better than others. But this is a book that has got meaning beyond the music world. It really is important for people to understand how devastating, how catastrophic mental illness can be. And as a society, we don't deal with this stuff well. Schizophrenia is incredibly common, Denny. It exists in the general population, 1 in 100 people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, by comparison, multiple sclerosis is 1 in 10,000. So, I mean, it's like the common cold of mental illness. And the medical professionals that I talk to are all disgusted at the kind of treatment that these people receive, because they scrape them up off the pavement, they put them into a hospital, they dial them in on drugs, and as soon as they're dialed in, they toss them back out on the street. Mm-hmm. And that's no way to deal with human beings, you know, with our brothers and sisters. There's so little compassion for these people. And, you know, the vast number of schizophrenics that are in the homeless communities, right? But Jim's a microcosm of all that. He got no compassion in his life. Nobody helped him. Everybody just looked the other way and hoped he could figure it out and go ahead and play the drum part. So when he killed his mother, it just came out of the blue to everybody. Nobody looked back and said, well, what caused that? How tormented was this guy? What sort of torture did he go through that led him to there? Nobody asked those questions. Right. They just like went, he killed his mother, and they looked away.
Yeah.
So that's why this book's important. It's not just Jim's story that we're trying to resurrect here. I want everybody to understand the very real cost of mental illness. And that this book accomplishes, I think.
That's it for this edition of The Rock Podcast. We're on YouTube and video, and we're also available on all the usual audio platforms wherever you get your podcasts. Sign up to our channel, and you'll be notified when a new episode is released. It's free, no charge. Find us at the website, therockpodcast.com. You can send your comments, questions, and suggestions to me at hello@therockpodcast.com. I'm Denny Somach, and I hope you will join us for the next episode. Goodbye for now.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.